Radio.
Let's get soft if you wanna get soft with it.
Sometimes you feel you gotta love somebody, and that somebody is you. Sometimes we feel we need to touch somebody, touch somebody.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Emotional Hangs. That's Joe DeRosa.
That's Kurt Braunohler. And this is the show where two men get vulnerable about their emotions and their friendship. So on the count of three, one, two, three,
let's get soft. You got something you want to get into right away, Joe?
Well, I have an I forgive you that I need to do.
I got to hear it. I want to hear it.
This is a real rough one, man.
Okay, give it to me. I'm aching inside to hear you be repentant about something. Because you are so unrepentant always.
What do you mean?
You know what I mean.
I constantly repent.
Yeah, no, you do. It's annoying.
This is what it is.
Okay. He took off his glasses, folks. He's rubbing his eye.
Now, look, I've already gone through the forgiving process with my parents and everything.
Right.
But I still think I need a little... I still think I need a little juice from the universe.
Okay.
My parents They came to visit. They were staying at my apartment while I was in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to just kind of... I flew them out so they could have like a little vacation in L.A. And mm-hmm. they also were going to watch my dog, which helped me out. We were two scratching each other's backs. So anyway, my mom did something that really irritated me before I left. And I was feeling quite resentful about it. So I brought it up to her on the way to the airport.
Oh, no.
When I was about to leave. And we got in this big screaming match, this big fight. And when I was getting on the, you know, getting out to go to get into the, going to the airport to get on the plane, my mom started crying, and I was like, "This is our problem. You don't communicate with me. You just cry later, and we need to be able to communicate." But the whole thing was about communication.
Uh-huh.
And my dad was sad. So anyway, we didn't leave on bad terms, but it certainly was.
You didn't leave on bad terms? She's crying as she gets on the plane?
She didn't get on the plane. I was getting on the plane.
Oh, you were getting
to go to Australia. Yeah.
Oh, this was right when they arrived.
No, they were there for a couple days before that.
Okay.
So, but it was this whole argument about communication. And it's been an ongoing thing for 20 years. So I had hit a point where I was basically saying to my parents, I feel stupid now. Do you understand that I've attempted to better our communication for all this time? And you don't seem to be receptive to what I'm trying to do for us. So now I'm the fool. I'm an idiot for continuing to go back to this well. And
you feel like you put yourself out there and it's not reciprocated. So you feel vulnerable and it's not... you don't see a similar vulnerability on their side.
Yes, that's basically...
You're putting yourself out there, and they're not putting themselves out there. That's how you feel.
And I love my parents very much. They love me very much. They're wonderful parents. But yeah, this is an issue, which is why I didn't feel horrible about this argument happening at an unfortunate time. Because I was like, you know, I don't care anymore. Like, it's got to be said. And if we can't communicate even enough to be able to say this to each, you know, this is the whole problem. But I felt bad. You feel bad getting on a plane like that. So what I did was, when I was in Australia, I called the airlines. They were supposed to leave the day I got back. I called the airline. I paid the change fees. I had their tickets moved back a day for, you know, so they had one more day and night here or whatever. And I called my parents and I said, look, you know, we're all sorry that things ended like that the other day. I love you guys. I know you love me. Here's what's happening. I move the flight back a day. I get back early on Monday. I'll be in the house, in the apartment by 11 a.m. You guys are staying with me that night. Let's just have some fun, all right? Let's go out for lunch. Let's get margaritas. I called up Vince in Georgia and Jesse Pop. I'm like, let's take my folks out drinking to our spots. We went to the Roost. We had a fucking blast. And it ended in a really lovely note after all that.
Yeah.
It kind of made up for everything. But I still, you know, still carrying a little bit of guilt about. There's look, I know it's not just them. It's me, too. There's something about, I still am not afraid to show my worst side to my parents.
Yeah.
I don't like that about myself. But it's very hard not to, because I think your parents are the ones that you've probably in your life feel the most hurt by at times and feel the most angry at times. And it's hard to not go to that place where you're at your worst because you feel scorned, you know? I don't know if scorn's the right word. Or scorned just for lovers?
No.
Okay, yeah. So, you know.
So, I mean, here's the deal, too. Just to give you an outside perspective on it is there is also something to be said for the fact that you can show your worst side to your folks, because I feel like I on some level in the last 20 years never showed like my real true, like at my worst to my mom. And I feel like because of that, there was a level of politeness between us.
Right.
And there wasn't as deep a connection as I wish. We loved each other and everything like that, but I was always just trying to put on a front of like good son for her.
Right.
And respectful and polite.
Right.
And I feel like I almost want to show my worst side so that we could get drilled down to that, like, this is just us talking, as opposed to it being like almost an awkwardness because we both were protecting ourselves somehow.
Sure.
So I understand that you want forgiveness for this, but on a certain level, just know that it's valuable to be able to feel like you can do that with your parents.
Well, I will say this. Had it not gone to that place, the next Monday would never have happened.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have stayed the extra day. And that was when I felt like we got deeper. Because good. I'll tell you, having my folks out with me and Jesse and Georgia and Vince,
yeah.
Some of our closest friends in the world.
Yeah.
And yes, folks, we're talking Georgia Hardstark from My Favorite Murder. These are the people I roll around with in this town. But Vince Averill, Jesse Pop, these are three of my literally best friends. And to have my folks out with them, we went out to dinner at Tam O'Shanter's, and then they met us after dinner for drinks. And to just start getting loose, having my dad take shots of whiskey with us, you know,
great.
Which I've never seen him do. Going to the Roost and getting my dad the 24-ounce beer.
Yeah.
And like just telling stories about the dumb business we work in and laughing and like telling stories too about people they knew or were aware of and laughing. That was a real bonding moment, man.
That's great.
And my mom and dad were over the moon the next day. They were like, that was such an amazing night. Like, because they don't do that.
Yeah.
They don't go to a weird dive bar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Drink giant beers. They've never experienced
that. See, and that's
like
the thing. It's like that kind of, I would never have gone to a dive, brought my mom to something like that. That's the flip side. Like, you sieve the best and the worst, you know? It's a closeness. I think you should value that. And I don't think you should worry about showing the worst side to your parents. Also, let me say to you, is that in my mind, I've never met your parents, the DeRosas, but in my mind, you guys having an argument on the way to the airport, like your mom is in the car cooking spaghetti sauce, and you're like, and your dad is just Chef Boyardee in the back seat, like just like pushing his little dimples in.
Uh-huh.
And he's got a little curly cue mustache.
Yeah. No, that's
and his
fine.
Your mom is just feeding him pasta and spaghetti.
And ladies and gentlemen, what you've just witnessed Kurt Braunholer display is a typical capturing of the Hollywood liberal and his hypocrisy. I can be racist about this group of people. That's fine.
Yeah, they haven't had it bad since the 20s. They've got, I say, bring it back. Fuck the Italians. Fuck the Irish. You deserved what you got when you were forced to build Central Park.
Oh, cut to Kurt being removed from the tour he's on. Romano's people called. They said he can't be associated with somebody like you. Also, his entire Italian family is offended. That is not happening in the car.
She's got a little oven in the glove box.
She has brought food in the car, though.
Yeah.
Like, not for her to eat. I mean, like, I will get picked up from the airport sometimes with them, and my mother will be like, we brought you a sandwich. Would you like a sandwich? And I'm always like, no, I don't want the sandwich that
is in
you made when you left, before you left
10
the house.
10 hours ago.
4 hours before I landed. You know, and it's like, no, I'm good. Thank you. But it is not the first fight we've had on the way to a departure at an airport. Because I do believe that, look, we're a loud family, man. You know, and we you know, it's not as bad as it was when I was growing up. You know, it was obviously a lot more intense when I was a bratty teenager and they were misunderstanding parents or whatever. But it got to the point, you know, where we all kind of saw, like, okay, we don't need to do this anymore. But, you know, we have had fight. I've noticed when there's a time element to our time together, the fight tension goes up.
It's like a countdown. You gotta get your fight in.
Well, I think it's a fight because I think everybody's emotional. Because right. I'm an only child. I'm adopted. And there's a weird, not weird, but there's a different dynamic with you and your parents when that's the situation. I think it's a lot more, you're a lot more sibling-like than somebody that's got six brothers and sisters would be with their folks. And I think there's this emotional turmoil of, like, this is the only time we have together.
Yeah.
And then it'll be over. And then what if I never see you guys again? And, you know, because that's a very Italian thing. Like, that's, don't go to bed angry. One of yous could die. You know, like don't leave angry.
Yeah.
You know, you may never, God forbid, you may never see him again.
See, this is what I'm talking about. You're saying, you're confirming all of my stereotypes about your family.
Really?
Yeah.
What part of what I just said went anywhere near somehow cooking rigatoni in the vehicle, which is impossible. You can't do that.
Also, your father has a chef hat on, and he's in the back seat.
That part,
Chef Boyardee.
I can deal with that part.
Okay.
Yeah.
Never go to bed. Yous could die in your sleep. That's what confirms. That's what's just being yelled while she's just stirring a big pot of rigatoni. A little calamari.
I hope the mafia kills you after this. I hope that there's a mob hit that gets put out on you.
I do hate. I have a in my chest. I have kind of a, like, a love and hatred for the Irish and the Italians of New Jersey, because that's where it's like everybody I knew was Irish or Italian. I thought I was Irish for many years.
What are you?
I'm just a mutt. I'm nothing really.
Do you have any Italian and Irish in you?
A little Irish, no Italian.
You don't have any Italian in you?
No, no
you
Italian.
You want some?
Oh, Jesus.
I can't believe
what
you
fell
for it.
What are you going to put a little of your mortadelle in me?
I just threw out some mortadella yesterday. I had it in my fridge. It went bad. I was eating it.
Hey, okay. You know what, Joe?
Yeah.
I forgive you.
Thank you. For the mortadella?
Yeah.
For being so grossly Italian, yeah. Even though I'm not even Italian.
No, you're not. You're Middle Eastern, right?
Yes. Which brings us to the heart of the discussion today. Today we're talking 23andMe. Kurt went on there to try to find a long-lost brother. I went on there to see if there was any clues to lead me to my biological parents. I also paid extra to do the genealogy shit.
Yeah, me too.
Like the health thing.
Oh, no, I didn't do the health thing.
Because I have no idea what my health history
is. Right.
So I'm just waiting, just white-knuckle waiting to get this letter in the mail that's like...
It's not a letter in the mail. And also, I didn't even know it was available. I had to, like, go and check.
You have to check it out.
Yeah,
oh, shit, that's right, I forgot.
So I went and checked, and super disappointing. Nothing. It gave me a bunch of second and fourth cousins. So, yeah, so basically the story is I have a brother I didn't know about. Essentially, everyone who could tell me about anything about him is dead at this point. But I started to, because of that, I was very disappointed. I texted you that, like, I didn't find out anything through 23andMe. I was hoping there was maybe that he had gone on just being curious to see if he, you know, could find his mother. And so then I started to email people. I was talking with my wife, and she's like, why don't you, You know, think of who might know who was around during that time. Because essentially my mom went, you know, we talked about this once for 5 minutes when 8 years ago. I was like, did you ever have a kid before me? She's like, yeah, we never talked about it. I was 16, went and lived in a convent for 6 months, came back. No one ever spoke of it. No one's ever spoken of it since then. I don't think anybody knew. And I emailed my uncle. He had no idea. And then his email really bummed me out because he was just so sad.
What do you mean?
He's just so sad that it happened. And it was like, just
it was
like,
it was like a disgrace to the family, you mean? Or he felt bad about the way they handled it?
Everything. It was just, and I just wasn't prepared to handle the emotional baggage coming from him because I feel like it's nothing to do with him. But you know, it was his sister's, her half sister. So, it really bummed me out, and I almost like abandoned the whole thing altogether.
Well, let's unpack that for a second.
Yeah,
we shouldn't glaze over it because that does suck. And this is the tough thing that every person has to come to terms with their own family, and it's what we were discussing before about my parents, and this is the same thing with your uncle. It's very hard when you have family members that are your elders. When they have the moment where they show you that they have shortcomings,
mm-hmm.
like normal people, you needed your uncle to be the uncle in that moment. You reverted to your 12-year-old self, and you needed him to be Uncle whoever, the adult, the guy that had the more knowledge than you, the guy that's been around the block and knows a few things. And he didn't. He showed you the same fears and vulnerability that you had at the time, and it sucks because you're like, God damn it, man, I needed you to step up right now for me.
And also on some level, it's just this fucking Catholic shit that pisses me off, where it's like there's like a shame about it. Do you know what I mean? It's like in my mind, it's like, yes, so kids in high school have sex sometimes, and sometimes somebody gets pregnant, you know, and if you're Catholic, you can't get an abortion, and so the child gets given up for adoption. It's not like my mom had a choice in any of this. You know what I mean? This was all forced on her.
Right.
And it's like the shame, the idea of shame and disgrace is what pisses me off and gets me angry about it. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
And especially because of the fact that I'm choosing to talk about this publicly. This is something that, and then I start feeling guilty. I start feeling guilty.
Why?
Because I'm talking about it publicly. This thing that my mom was such a big secret. She never told. Like, she told, I think, my father and myself, and that's the only people who knew who were still alive.
Right.
Because I've now reached out to other people, and no one knows anything about this.
Well, don't feel, first of all, I forgive you.
Thank
Look,
you.
We snuck and I forgive you in,
I know you
in
did.
The middle of the main discussion. You have no need to feel guilt. There's nothing to feel guilty about. Your mother was not ashamed of it. The people, everybody is responsible for their own feelings. You're not responsible for... The only reason you feel guilt is because you're worried that some uncle is going to get offended that you're talking about this publicly.
No, do you know what it is?
Whatever it is.
No, you know what it is?
What?
It's crazy. I worry about what my mom thinks. And that's cuckoo because either she's where she thought she was going, which is another plane where she has of no concern what happens in this world,
right.
Or she doesn't exist.
Right.
You know, it's crazy for me to like be like worried about that because it's just, you know, but I still feel it. I totally feel it. I feel guilty and I feel like I shouldn't talk about it.
Well, this goes back to what you were saying earlier, the polite thing.
Yeah.
You put on a face for your mom, and it was about keeping up, the airs or whatever that you were putting on, and not about how you really felt in the moment.
Yeah.
And I can tell you this: I'll forgive you again. Your mom will not. She wouldn't care. She.
No, I think you're right. She
would
wouldn't.
Have no problem with your expression of this, and I have the feeling that she would have talked about this a lot more with you had you chosen to.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't know how to do it. She was probably thinking, oh, I wish I could drop my guard a little bit more with Kurt, but maybe that'll weird him out. I don't know how that's going to feel with him.
Right. I think so. And I think really what happened, the reason that wall was up, and it's only something I recently realized, is that we were so close. We were so close up until about like 12 years old. Like we were... each other's best friend. It was just me and her. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
She had, you know, she had gotten divorced. She moved across the country. She was in a place that she hadn't lived for in 20 years. And she just had this little boy. And it was just us. And then when I hit 12, I kind of was like, I think she always felt bad that there wasn't like a male influence. And then when I started becoming like I think, you know, prepubescent and like a boy or becoming a man, I think she's like, I need to give him his space so he can like figure this shit out. And then that kind of that, which was healthy. Do you know what I mean? At the time.
Sure.
So it wasn't like a mama's boy anymore. But I think that wall never, we never found a way around it. We said we loved each other to each other all the time. I'm not saying it was anything like that.
Sure.
But there was always like sometimes we would run out of things to talk about. Do you know what I mean? Like that sort of thing.
I always run out of shit to talk to my parents about.
Yeah.
Constantly. But I have the same thing with my mom. I was a mama's boy, and I got to a certain age, and suddenly we weren't that close anymore. And she has said as much to me. She has said, "I tried to give you your space, and yeah. I tried to do this, and I tried, you know." And I have said back to her, "You know, Mom, sometimes I don't need the space. Like sometimes I just, it's okay. You're not bugging me. Like let's try to figure out a good dynamic here." And she tries, and I try, and whatever. But like. That's what moms do, and you know it's an old cliche, and it's a tired thing to say at this point. But it's, you know, parents do their best. There is no handbook to any of this.
Oh no, I've realized that just 6 weeks into being a parent.
Yeah,
you know, it's just like, I don't know, is this the right thing to do?
Yeah, I mean it's you do your best, and I think the people, you know, look, I think a lot of our. Quite frankly, people we know, our friends, are shameful that they. It's not our friends particularly. It's people in Los Angeles. This is a very LA and Hollywood thing to do. I know a lot of people that don't speak to their parents anymore, or don't speak to their parents often because they can't deal. You know what I mean? And look, it's one thing if you come from an abusive family or something like that and you have really bad blood. I get that. Nobody's saying you're indebted to your folks. But for Christ's sakes, it's, you know, if you had the regular upbringing that all of us had, which is butting heads with your parents and arguing about the stupid shit that you argue about and them not getting your music and you screaming, leave me alone. And the thing that every kid does with his parents. And like you don't talk to them now because you don't get their politics or you don't understand why they manage their money in a certain way or they're too religious for whatever it is. Get the fuck over it. I mean, seriously, grow the fuck up and get the fuck over it. Everybody in your life can't think exactly the way you do, you know, and
they'll be dead.
Yeah.
They will be dead.
Yeah, that day comes.
That's the main thing about parents is they're going to die before you.
Yeah, and it's
and
like,
you're going to really be sad after that. There's so much I wish I had done, you know?
But you did an amazing thing. You did a ton with your mom.
I know,
it's
but
it's never enough.
It's never enough.
But I don't mean because it's not enough. I mean because you'll just never feel like it's enough. But let yourself off the hook, dude.
Yeah.
You did something incredible. When your mom needed you most, you gave up everything you had and you went to New York. And you lived with her and took care of her, you know? Most people in the world wouldn't do that. This is the shit of human beings. This is what shit they are. They, you know, they wouldn't do it.
I like that you turn it into how we can shit on the rest of the world.
Well, because it's disgusting to me. When my mom had cancer and I went home for two months, that's it. 2 months for her operation and recovery until she was on her feet. 2 months. I left my apartment in New York. I went home and I lived with her for two. You know how many people said to me, dude, what you're doing is so amazing. I just can't even wrap my... It's like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Why were you the devil? It's 2 months, you fucking psychopath. It's my mother. What is the matter with you? God damn it. I'm all worked up now.
I love it. It's I appreciate it.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So you got to let yourself off the hook with this stuff.
Are you going to look for your parents? That's what I wanted to know.
I don't know. I don't know.
You're on the fence.
I don't know what this thing is going to say. In fact, I'm going to check it today when I get home because I forgot that I had to check it myself. I thought they emailed me like your results will be ready in 6 weeks or whatever, right. You know, but sometimes it'll be faster. So I'll check it today and see what it says. But, you know, I don't know. I think the most likely scenario is I'm going to log on and it's going to be, you know,
disappointing.
So, like you're saying, so-and-so is your fifth cousin and you're like, eh, whatever.
Yeah.
But I also think there's a chance I could log on and you know, have my jaw on the ground. If it's like, your parents are these two people, I'm going to be like, what the fuck?
Right.
You know? But then there's a third scenario where I go on, nothing happens, and then the story ends up being, and 11 years later, this person joins 23andMe right. because they're curious. Turns out they're my brother. They contact me. You know, it can work that way, too. It can work that way with you. So I don't really know what to expect. I got to admit, thinking about going home and checking it is...
giving you some anxiety?
I don't know if it's anxiety or excitement. It feels a little more like anxiety, though.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel the same as when I'm going to go buy something on Amazon, which is usually excitement. So this feels different.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know. We'll see. Well, anyway, this is going to be a short episode. I feel like we've kind of...
I feel emotionally drained already.
Yeah, I feel like we've covered these bases, and we don't need to keep going on just to keep going on. And in fact, next week's episode is a tad longer than usual. So,
and I would like, and I think we just, I would love to end the episode with a sweet journal entry.
I have one here.
Yes.
As you know, I keep a file on my phone called Deep Thoughts.
And this, of course, this segment is called Vulnerability Corner, where we read a journal entry for you.
Actually, it's Random Thoughts. Excuse me. Deep Thoughts was the Jack Handy thing.
Mm-hmm.
Random Thoughts. This is not particularly sad or happy, but I feel like this kind of sums up. I felt like I finally summed up the way I feel about life in one sentence. The other day, and I wrote this down, I'd rather be happy in the most common of places than miserable in the most revered. That is how I feel about life.
Interesting. So this has to do with kind of all aspects of life, like even career-wise?
Everything. It all just kind of finally made sense to me. I was like, I like dive bars. I like simple restaurants. I like creature comforts in life. I don't buy jewelry and cars. And I don't have money to buy jewelry and cars, but you know what I mean. I don't buy extravagant things with my money. I buy records that I really love and movies that I really love. And it's the same thing with the career. Like, I have no desire, no part of me ever dreams of one day sitting at the Oscars or winning an Oscar. If it happened, I would certainly be pleased about it, and I wouldn't scoff at the situation. But I just don't dream about it. I wouldn't feel comfortable. I wouldn't be happy. It's much cooler to me. My dreams are much more, oh man, that's an awesome horror convention. I'd love to be over there with those people.
Here's my question.
Those feel like my people, which it feels. So I mean, common in that sense, where it feels normal to me, not foreign.
What if it was reversed, though? Right now, the sentence is, "I would rather be happy in the most common places than miserable in the most revered." Mm. What if it was miserable in the common places and you feel happy in the most revered?
What do you mean? I mean, I know what you mean, but I know what those words
mean. What if you happened to find yourself in a revered place and also found that you were happy? Would you prefer to be in your commonplace and miserable?
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not excluding the idea that you could be happy in a sought-after position somewhere or an unlikely scenario or something like that. I know you can be happy there. I'm just saying I know a lot of people that would rather... that would put status before their happiness.
And I think so?
Absolutely.
I think they think that status will make them happy.
They do.
And it never does.
And it never does. That's why I say...
Because there's always somebody... The thing is about that is there's always somebody who's got more status. But exactly. There's never anybody who's just more happy.
That's my point. And that's what I think happens to a lot of people, particularly in the business we're in. And I think you mm-hmm. have to recognize that. Where do your priorities lie? Is it with your happiness or with your success?
I think that's the idea of that sentence, though.
Yeah.
Is that you prioritize happiness in common places over revered places.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not afraid of a revered, but I'm not saying fuck being in a movie that gets attention. I'm not saying that. It could happen, it could not. Doesn't matter. What matters to me is if somebody presented me with two scenarios, you can be in this movie with Bradley Cooper, and I'm not picking on Bradley Cooper, I'm just saying, just for example.
Wow, you were so quick to let us all know that you weren't picking on Bradley Cooper.
Well,
as if all of us were like, ooh, when Bradley hears this, that Joe doesn't want to be in a movie with him, he's going to be so hurt.
All right, fair enough. I just meant, like, I'm not using him as an example because I heard bad things about him or something.
Great.
My point is
if I like that you have such revere for Bradley Cooper, but are willing to shit on Nick Offerman at any day of the week.
Bradley Cooper seems like a nice guy. But my point is, if somebody said, hey, you could be in this movie, it's going to be the summer blockbuster of the year. It's you, it's Bradley Cooper, it's Meryl Streep. It's every famous fucking person, right?
You'd be like, no, I'm busy at my dive bar.
No, but here's the thing.
What?
You're going to be fucking miserable every day of it. It is going to be a shit show. It is going to be stressful.
Mm-hmm.
It is going to be a year and a half of your life where you feel sick to your stomach every day. But hey, it could put you in a better position. Who knows?
Yeah.
Or, hey man, you could do this cable TV show that you really relate to and you'll have the fucking time of your life and you'll meet your family and all.
I think that's very smart.
It's like, yeah, I'd take the cable thing.
I think it's very smart.
Who wants to wake up sick every day? I don't want to do that.
I got a journal entry for you.
Cool.
You ready for a random thought here? There's a universe out there where everyone farts once a year, but all at the exact same time.
What the hell does that mean?
Multiverse theory. You are familiar with it from comic books.
Yeah.
So there is a universe where there's a planet Earth. Everything's exactly the same, but nobody farts except for one day a year, and everyone at the exact same moment, the whole world farts.
That's pretty great. So that helps with embarrassment.
It's like a New Year's Eve. People get excited about it. It's like April 20th. Earth Day is on a different day in this universe. It's April 21st. But the day, this is the day where everyone farts. And they fart, obviously, since they don't fart all year. It's like a 3-hour long fart.
See, I thought everybody just let one rip together in unison. And I thought that was actually kind of a beautiful thing. Because it means we're all being vulnerable together at once. And therefore, nobody ever has to feel embarrassed.
There we go.
That's what I took away from it.
And it's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, I took your fart joke and elevated it to...
to a real emotional place.
Thanks for listening, folks. We're out of here.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Kurt.
Bye.